And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and our discussion this evening of something I think is really important, and I think you're going to find it exquisitely interesting. I really do. And it was important enough and interesting enough that I took last evening, and instead of being live on the air, we did an encore presentation while I was doing some research and gathering some information and some photographs, and for this show tonight. And I think you will say that it was well worth it. As I said, we're going to be discussing a place for which there is some evidence of intelligent life, and it's a place that we have not talked about before in the nearly 13 years that we've been broadcasting. So how did all this get started? Well, it got started with a telephone conversation, and then another telephone conversation with somebody else. In these two telephone conversations with two separate individuals separated by hundreds and hundreds of miles, I was told by both of these individuals that they had been to this place. Now, one of those conversations, the person said, man, I just woke up and I just had a dream. But I'm not so sure. Began then to tell me the content of the, quote, dream. And I was of the opinion after a few minutes that this was not a dream at all, because this person was remembering way too many details. And not just details, fine details. And way more than you would have from a dream. Plus, there were some things that this person told me that could not have been a dream. I can't go into that, because to do that would reveal this person's identity, and I cannot do that without permission. And I don't have that permission. However, he told me something about another individual who was there, and the thing that he told me, I know the other individual quite well, and he doesn't. And the thing that he told me hit the nail on the head. It's something about the other individual. And you could not have known that if you had not been spending time with that individual. So I was of the opinion that this was perhaps a memory that was resurfacing, you know, one that had either been repressed or suppressed. Difference being, repressed would be something his own psyche did. Suppressed would be something somebody did to him. And so I was of the opinion that that was a memory that was resurfacing. Now, I mentioned that he told me something about another individual that I know. And you could not know this unless you spent time, a good amount of time, with this individual and got to know this other individual. You could not know this, but it was exactly right. So after that conversation, I called the other individual, and I began to describe all of this, and I said, have you ever seen a place like that? And he seemed surprised and said, yes, as a matter of fact, I have, but I've never talked about it in public. And then he began to tell me about what he saw. Well, this really got my interest, folks. I got to tell you, this really got my interest up. And so I began researching this particular place, and I found that there are a number of other people who have said that they were taken by extraterrestrials on board what we call a UFO, and that they were taken to this place. I did not find, you know, thousands of these, but I did find a number of other people who claimed that it had happened to them and that they had been taken to this place. So when I found that out, I was quite naturally even more interested, and so I dug deeper. And here is a little thumbnail sketch of the place. First of all, it's not one of the planets. Not one of the planets of our solar system. In size, it's larger than Pluto. It's larger than Mercury. It's larger than our moon, but it's smaller than Earth. It has an atmosphere, and it's a thin atmosphere, but it's almost all oxygen. Has trace amounts of hydrogen, but it's almost all oxygen. It has an iron core and with a mantle, and it's layered like Earth is, you know. And as a result of the motion of the heavenly body and this iron core, it has a magnetosphere. It has massive amounts of water. Some of it, a lot of it, is water ice. Some, a massive amount, is liquid water as well. But it also has land. About a third of this place is dry land, and it's comprised primarily of clay. And those of you who know anything about biology and zoology know that is very, very important. It sounds quite a bit like Earth, doesn't it? But it's not Earth. When you talk about this place in those terms, it sounds quite a bit like Earth. So why do I tonight even consider the possibility that there could be intelligent life there? Well, first of all, because of the testimonies of two individuals I know, and then because of the testimonies of some other people I don't know, but I read their testimonies, I read what they said about having been taken to this place by extraterrestrials. Now, are you ready for this? There's another reason. The other reason is because SETI and NASA, working together, it's reported that NASA and SETI have had communications with the inhabitants of this place. Now, I know that sounds pretty fanciful. I know that sounds pretty wild. I'll tell you all about it in just a few minutes. But first, I think you ought to know where this place is. I think you ought to know what it's called and where it is and what it is. What do you think? I've told you it's not one of the planets of our solar system, so what do you think? Like some planet in the Goldilocks zone around a nearby star? Well, no. Actually, those kinds of exoplanets, we know they're there and they can verify them scientifically, but to get an optical picture of them is virtually impossible because they're so far away. But we do have a picture of this place. And it's a pretty amazing place. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the name of the place is Ganymede. Ganymede is the seventh moon of Jupiter. It's not a planet. It's a moon of Jupiter. But it is planet-sized. As I said, it's bigger than Pluto. It's bigger than Mercury. It's bigger than our moon. 1.5 times bigger than our moon, and something like 2.2 times more mass than our moon. It's a moon of Jupiter. It's in orbit around Jupiter. It is, as I said, the seventh planet out. As you start counting from Jupiter, you count the first. I said planet, I meant moon. You count the first moon out, and then the second moon, and the third moon, and fourth. This is number seven. But it is the biggest satellite, the biggest moon in our solar system. It's a planet-sized moon. First discovered in 325 BC by the Chinese. Now, you got to wonder, how did they do that without telescopes? But they write about it. It was observed by Galileo on January the 7th in the year 1610 AD. Now, NASA says it's an ice world. Granted, there's a great deal of ice there. But there is also a great deal of land. One third of the moon called Ganymede is clay. It's dry land comprised mostly of clay. But under the surface, you know, there's a whole lot of ice there on the surface. And as far as I know, there is no liquid water on the surface. But about 75 kilometers down, there's water. A vast, vast, I'm going to say planet-wide, because I don't know what else, it's not a planet, but planet-wide body of water about 75 kilometers down. And so you've got dry land and ice that are sort of floating on that big body of water. So there's a lot of liquid water, lots of liquid water on this planet, on this moon. It's called Ganymede for a reason. Now, the planet that it is in orbit around is Jupiter. It takes 7.154 days of our days for it to go around a complete orbit around Jupiter. So every 7.1.5 days, it makes a complete orbit. It's in tidal lock with Jupiter. That means that it does to Jupiter what our moon does to us. I'll get it said in a minute. In that the same face is facing Jupiter at all times. So if you were on Jupiter looking up at this, you would always see the same side of that moon. Just like our moon does here. Our moon presents the same face to us all the time. You never ever see the other side of the moon. You always see the same side. And that's also true with Ganymede and Jupiter. If you were on Jupiter, you would always see the same side of that moon. Now, I mentioned that NASA says that this is an ice world. And yet, there are exposed areas where there is no ice. the darkest areas on this moon are clay. But even so, I want you to consider for a moment, because I, in doing this research, I talked to two or three people about this, other people other than the ones I mentioned. And that seemed to be the number one factor that, if it's an ice world, there's probably no intelligent life there. So are you telling me then that there's no intelligent life in Antarctica? That's an ice world. It's ice. It's really cold. There's not a time when it's not cold. It is an ice world in Antarctica. So are you asserting that there is no intelligent life in Antarctica? I don't think you are. You see the point? The point is that doesn't preclude or prevent intelligent life being there. It also does not preclude intelligent life living under the surface. And during the ice age here on this planet, when this was an ice world, in the coldest places, there were people who burrowed into the ground and lived underground. And many who lived in caves because it went into the ground. No matter how cold it got outside, it was fairly temperate inside these caves. Go inside a deep cave today and you'll find no matter how cold it is outside, no matter how hot it is outside, you're going to have a constant temperature inside of 65 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit. And so there's certainly, if that's an ice world, there's certainly nothing that says that that in itself precludes there being intelligent life there. And I think it's foolish for anybody to assert that that would prevent or preclude intelligent life being there or anywhere else. Because there's always a way, you know. There is just always a way. If it's an ice world today, that doesn't mean that it always has been. If it's mainly ice today, there may have been a time when that was mainly water. And if there were intelligent beings on that body, when it turned to ice, maybe they went underground. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Boy, as captive, and made him the cupbearer to ability of intelligent life on one of the moons of Jupiter. As ridiculous as that may sound to a lot of you, consider the information that we're presenting. And especially, you'll want to consider the photograph that we're about to examine. I'm on purpose using a photograph that is easily accessible to everyone. So go over to Wikipedia, do a search for Ganymede, and read the article. Now, there is Ganymede mythology. That's one page. And then there's just Ganymede, the moon of Jupiter. On that one, there is a photograph. And the photograph shows two craters. And this is a black and white photograph. It is pretty uninteresting if you leave it just as it is. But what you're going to need to do is you're going to need to zoom in, and we're going to focus on two particular areas of the photograph. The crater at the top is one crater on top above another one. Okay, so you have a crater on the south end of the picture, you have a crater on the basically a triangular-shaped dark area, shadowed area. Looks like a hole that's kind of triangular-shaped. And it's big, pretty big. Just to the northeast of that, there's a little white blip. Now, I see other white blips all over this picture. I looked at all of them, But the one that I have circled, the one that's at the 1 o'clock position on the crater, okay, so the crater at the north end of the picture, at the 1 o'clock position, there is a white blip. That one is interesting. The others, well, I just couldn't see anything really about them that looked like anything artificial. So let's begin by taking a closer look at that dark area that I have circled inside that crater. It's not exactly triangular, but kind of. It's just a dark area, and looks like a deeper hole in that crater. In fact, that really doesn't look like a crater. You know, it looks like a moat. I'm not saying it is, but it has the appearance of like a moat, and then raised land in the middle. And in the middle of that raised land, a big triangular hole. That's what it looks like. Now, if you zoom in a little bit more, you can see down into that hole. And it looks like there's some stuff down in there, but you really can't tell what it is. So what I did, and I'm going to do it for those who are watching, but I'm going to tell you what I did so you can do it yourself. You download that picture. I told you where to go get it. Put it into your Photoshop or put it into your whatever photo program you have, and then just brighten the picture. Change the contrast and brighten the picture so that you can see what's down in that hole. Those of you who are watching right now are probably pretty astounded at what you see down in that hole, because what you see down in that hole looks like some kind of machinery. But is it really, or is this pixelation? Well, let's zoom in a little more. You know, it's not pixelation. I'll show you in a minute exactly how you know that. But let's zoom in a little more. You ready to be absolutely astounded? You ready for your socks to be blown off? Well, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, machinery. I don't know what kind of machinery that is, but it's machinery. And it's down inside. It's obviously, we're looking at something very obviously artificially constructed. This is not nature. It's metallic, and it's long, it's big. There are several parts to this piece of machinery. There's a lot of stuff down in there. It's a big machine down in that hole. That's Ganymede. I told you it would blow your socks off. And that picture is one of the most public pictures of Ganymede you can find on the internet. You find this picture everywhere, all over the internet. That picture is everywhere. And what picture is this? Well, it's the one that you can download right off of Wikipedia's. Now, I would suggest you go do it, because after this show it may disappear. I suggest you go download that picture from Wikipedia right now. Or you can go over to NASA and search and search and search and search and search, and you can find this picture. But this picture, issued by NASA, is all over the internet. And this picture, issued by NASA, is the one that shows that there is something down in that crater. And when you change the contrast so that you can see in the dark, it's machinery. Now, I told you I was going to show you it's not pixelation. And here's how you know it's not pixelation. I am showing now the one where I have changed the contrast, so I've brightened things up. And you can see the machinery quite clearly down in that hole. You can see it. Now I'm going to go back to the picture that is all I've done is zoom in. I haven't changed any contrast. It's the picture that you can get from Wikipedia. And I haven't changed any contrast. And you can see that same machinery down in that hole. It's dark and it's hard to see as much detail, but you can see it is there. This is not pixelation. That's really there. And I don't know what it is in terms of what it does. I don't know. But it ain't no geographically, geologically formed structure. I know that's bad English. It is not a structure having been formed by geology. It is not. That is artificial. All right, I said we were going to take a look at that little white blip as well. That little white blip northeast of the crater. All right, so let's do that. All right, let's zoom in on that. That little blip there looked very interesting to me because I looked at all the other little blips all over that picture, and they all look like natural formations, you know, boulders or something like that. This one doesn't. So I, just to give you an example, we're going to go due south, southeast a little bit of this blip. Okay, we're just going to travel down the picture that you can get at Wikipedia or at NASA. We're going to go down and take a look at another white blip. There's a whole bunch of little white blips down there, standing up like tombstones. I don't know what those are, but they don't have, I mean, other than the fact that there's a bunch of them and they're in rows, they don't have an appearance of artificiality to them. But the one just northeast of the crater, it does. Now, you might be saying, well, I don't know, I just don't see it. Okay, let's brighten the picture up. When we brighten the picture up, this is what we get. And I'm going to zoom in. Looks like a building to me. Kind of a, almost the shape of a Quonset hut with something up on top of it, like a radar dome or something. And we can see through the front door. We can see, or, you know, through the, it's like an overhang, and back under the overhang we can see the frame of what looks like a door. Now, I don't know that that is actually artificial. I can't say that with as much certainty as I'm saying that the stuff in that crater is artificial. It looks artificial to me. This looks like it's constructed, and it looks like it possibly could be, you know, an access point to whatever is underground. The gods, and made him, Zeus made Ganymede his lover. The gods were kind of AC/DC, you see. They kind of went both ways. And so Ganymede was the lover of Zeus, and he was the cupbearer to the gods. So whenever this was discovered, being so close to Jupiter, you know, it didn't have a name at first, but then they finally settled upon calling it Ganymede. All right, now, this is an amazing planet. Well, I'm calling it a planet again. It's a moon. It's an amazing place. It has a very thin atmosphere, but that atmosphere is almost entirely oxygen. In fact, monatomic oxygen, O2, and O3, which is ozone. So it's oxygen rich, although it's a thin atmosphere. But, you know, the more oxygen content there is, the less volume of air you would have to breathe in order to supply what you need. Now, as I was researching this, I came across a really amazing set of information. I'm going to share it with you in just a moment, but I want to tell you about something else that was also amazing, and it's kind of related. In 1996, there was a guy by the name of Yosip Ibrahim who published a book called I Visited Ganymede. And he wrote this as fiction. But in the preface to the book, he says that although the book is fiction, the event actually took place, and that he was picked up by a UFO and was taken to a large complex on Ganymede. So now let's move forward to the year 2010. In 2010, there's a guy by the name of Rupert Matthews. Now, Rupert Matthews, he didn't just begin in 2010. He writes nonfiction, historical stuff, and he's written some, I don't know, close to 200 books. And he wrote and published in 2010, he published a book called Alien Encounters. And in Alien Encounters, there is an astounding story. And that story says that in the mid-1980s, SETI and NASA received a signal from Ganymede. And they could not interpret that signal. They did send a message back using Morse code. Now, what happened was astounding. What happened was, you know, they by the way, Rupert Matthews, this is not fiction. This book is presented as historical fact, historical data. He was told this information, he was given this information by a NASA astronomer who was working with SETI on this. And he does not name the astronomer, although I'm sure NASA could figure it out. This astronomer told him this story. So what happens is in the mid-1980s, they receive this signal that's obviously intelligent, and it's coming from Ganymede. And they tried to decipher it. There was no way. They could not decipher that signal. And so President Reagan, he was the president at the time, President Reagan was informed about this. An international conference was called to discuss what to do. And it was decided that they would use Morse code, because that would be probably the easiest code system for anybody else to figure out. And they were going to send a message and aim it back at Ganymede, which they did. So the message that Earth sent to Ganymede reads as follows. We have received your signal, but we do not understand it. Please resend your signal using this language and transmission code. Immediately after that message was sent, this signal that they were picking up from Ganymede ceased. So, I mean, it wasn't just like a one burst. It was like a continuous stream of data. And it ceased, just like that. As soon as they pointed the transmitters at Ganymede and sent that signal and sent that message, bam, just like that, the signal from Ganymede ceased. Well, they were pretty anxious, you know. They thought that they would be getting a reply pretty quickly, and they didn't. And so they were getting pretty anxious about that and kind of thinking, well, you know, maybe it's nothing. So day after day, week after week, no signal. And so, you know, the big shots begin to sort of give up hope of actually hearing back from them. And then finally, after more than a month, all of a sudden there was a signal detected coming from Ganymede. And it was in Morse code. So they were pretty excited. But guess what it said? All it said was, "We weren't talking to you." Don't you love it? Our first communication that has any kind of documentation about it. First communication with an extraterrestrial race. And they said, "You know what? We weren't talking to you." And that's all it said. And they received no more communications from them. Mind your own business. Run along, kid. You're bothering me. Don't you love it? Now, is all of that a joke? Well, it wasn't written as a joke. Rupert Matthews has quite a string of books and reputation for writing historical books, and he presented it as fact. He was given this information by an astronomer with NASA, and he published it. And so I found that to be really interesting. And I decided, you know what? NASA says it's an ice world. But they do tell us that the atmosphere is mostly oxygen and there is a humongous amount of water, both ice and liquid water, trace amounts of hydrogen in the atmosphere. It has a magnetosphere, just like a planet. It's got a magnetosphere. Well, not all planets have magnetospheres, but Earth does, and that moon of Jupiter does, that particular one, has a magnetosphere. And so I started thinking about, you know, that whole deal with the ice world was a little bit of an obstacle for me at first. And then I started thinking about, yeah, but what about Antarctica? The North Pole and the South Pole have inhabitants. It's tough, but there's intelligent life there. And, you know, you might say, well, but there couldn't be any, like, indigenous people living in Antarctica. Yeah, there could be. I don't think there is, but there could be. It is possible. There's plenty of food. It is cold, that's for sure. You would have to burrow deep down into the ice or get to one of those mountain tops that's sticking up above the ice and burrow into the side of that. You'd have to get out of the weather. But there's plenty of food. Lots and lots of animal life along the shorelines. So if there was indigenous life, it would probably be congregated around the shoreline somewhere and living underground. If it could be done here, why could it not be done there? Well, I would think that if there's any type of intelligent life there, which, you know, this book by Rupert Matthews asserts that there is, and that we received signals from them, and that they deciphered ours and sent it back to us, sent a message back to us in Morse code in English, and it just said, we weren't talking to you. Okay, so let's assume that there's intelligent life there. Then there ought to be some photographic evidence somewhere that would indicate that there is some intelligent life there. We have photographs of Ganymede. Not a whole lot. They're pretty good, but we don't have a lot of them. And so I just wondered, you know, well, I wonder if there's anything in any of these photographs of Ganymede. And I'm going to be sharing some photographs with you, and I'll be describing these for those who are listening. Those who are watching, you will see them. And what we're going to do is, let me go ahead and set this up, because if you're listening, I want you to be able to see this photograph anyway. And here is how you do it. This photograph that we're going to be focused on, the easiest way for you to find this is just go to Wikipedia and look up Ganymede. Just do a search for Ganymede and find it on Wikipedia. And you're going to see a photograph that shows you two craters. It's a black and white photograph. There are two craters. That's all. Not a very interesting photograph, actually. At least, not at first. But if you go... Now, you can go to NASA and get this same photograph. This is the same thing NASA's got. But it's easier to find it if you just go to Wikipedia and look at their article on Ganymede. And then you'll see this photograph there. So you do that during the break. We'll be back right after this break. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're delighted you're here. You truly have my sympathy for what you missed in that first hour. And you have my best hopes, dreams, prayers that you never, ever suffer that trauma again. Oh, my God, what you missed in the first hour. But we're glad you're here now. The telephone lines are open. We'd like for you, ladies and gentlemen, around the world to join the conversation about all of this. And you do that by giving us a telephone call at 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It will work from anywhere in the world. But because international calling can be expensive, we have an additional option for you, and it is called the Flash Message. To use that option, go to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above the picture you'll see the link that says Flash Message. That's if you're outside the USA and outside of Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Jerome.
Hi. First of all, I want to commend you for your detective work here. And I was just wondering, with this intelligent signal, if you were the president or if you were in charge, and you intercepted this signal and then you transmitted back and then there was silence, the signal, you know, quit, the original signal quit transmitting.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that alarm you?
It would be a cause of concern, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be. But what are they going to do about it?
I understand. I knew you were going to go there. If there was an invasion coming towards us, I would imagine would be, what are we going to do about it?
You know, this could be what prompted Ronald Reagan's comments about an alien force already among us.
You know, I thought the same thing when you mentioned about President Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
Furthermore, if this signal, they sent it back and then they said, we're not talking to you, my first question then would be, well, who are they talking to? And then second of all, why aren't they talking to that other party anymore?
Well, you know, that all of those are excellent observations. First, they continued, that signal continued until we transmitted in Morse code and aimed it right at that particular spot on Ganymede. I mean, they didn't just aim it at Ganymede. There was a particular spot where the signal was coming from, and they aimed it right there. And so they sent the signal in Morse code, and right then, the other signal that that NASA and SETI had been receiving stopped right then. But it does, you know, when they say, we weren't talking to you, well, as you say, then who were they talking to?
You know what? Also, excuse me, my phone just knocked off. It also, getting back to the moon, our moon always faces this, the same, from the Earth, we see the same side of the moon all the time.
Right.
And I always thought that was, you know, peculiar.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this this Ganymede does the same thing to Jupiter, there's been speculation that our moon is artificial.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if Ganymede is, I know it's much more dense, if it's artificial.
It might be, but you know, the speculation about our moon is because it's hollow.
Mm-hmm.
Ganymede is not. It has an iron core and a mantle and layers of stuff, just like the Earth has. So, I would not suspect that it is an artificial satellite. Our moon not only is hollow, there are photographs showing the ribbing, the grid work that make up the shell. Have you ever seen those?
No, I haven't. This is the first I've heard of that, but
yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's. I think it's on the dark side, what we call the dark side of the
mm-hmm.
moon, which of course it isn't, but
yes.
The side we never see. I think that's where it is, but I have seen that, and those photographs I think were taken by the how many moon probes did they send? Something like 29 moon probes before they started sending the Apollo missions. And they got photographs from all over the moon. They mapped the whole moon and before they started the Apollo missions. And so they're not, you know, the highest definition, but you can clearly see the grid work of the outer shell.
Well, these ETs, I'll call them, they have to be more intelligent than us. So we were not able to decipher their code, but they were very easily able to decipher our code and communicate back to us.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, they got this signal all of a sudden in a code they didn't know, in a language they didn't know. And so their version of SETI went running
mm-hmm.
to their version of the president. They had their little meetings, you know, just like happened here. And finally it was decided, we'll break the code and see what it says. And so they broke the code. And then their big meeting with their president, you know, he said, well, just send a message back that says, we weren't talking to you.
Mm-hmm. I can see the humor in that. They probably had our code broken because we've been transmitting radio and television. And I think what did it was us directing it specifically to one spot there.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, there's always a question, you know, is this story true that the astronomer told? I don't doubt Rupert Matthews. You know, I think he's factually telling you, look, an astronomer with NASA working with SETI gave me this information. So I don't doubt that. But there's always the question, was the story the astronomer told Rupert Matthews true? And I would think it probably is. And the reason I would think it probably is because it's never been reported.
Well, I understand where you're coming from on that.
Mm-hmm.
One last thing about the machinery.
Mm-hmm.
How large of an area in that big crater are we looking at?
You know, I'm not sure. I was so rushed trying to get all of the information for the show, and that's just one thing that I didn't get. But that's going to be several kilometers wide.
Yeah, to me, it doesn't appear to be machinery as much as an industrial complex composed of numerous machines. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, it might be. But it's sure not boulders.
No, it's not boulders. It's not natural. Once again, you put the spot on the under the magnifying glass.
Yeah. Did your socks get blown off when I did?
Yeah, you know what, Kevin? It really did. I give you kudos for this. I saw your, you know, on the website in the members area. You said, you know, something's going to knock your socks off,
mm-hmm.
And it definitely did.
Well, I'm glad it did.
One last thing. Uh-huh. I wonder what Dr. Brooks Agnew would think about this.
Well, I don't know. I'll give him a call and ask him sometime this week. I'll get in touch with him and see what he's got to say about it.
Well, maybe he's seen the program.
Yeah, well, he might. He might.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if you can hear it, but I can hear it. Every once in a while, I hear the clicking of a mouse, and that's not me. Have you been hearing that? That's not coming from here. So I guess, you know, some of our monitors have their mics open. You guys can go ahead and talk if you want to. I mean, you know, it's all right. Join the conversation. 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. Is there intelligent life on Ganymede? You know, I have to admit that's something I'd never even considered. We have talked about one of the moons of Saturn, and that being Titan. And we've talked about, you know, well, it looks like there's stuff there that's been constructed. And we've talked about that it's, you know, the atmosphere is thick with methane, and that would not preclude life. Did you just hear that? You hear that clicking? That's not me. I don't know if you heard that. I can hear it in the headphones, and I'm hearing a mouse click. There's nobody else in this studio. And all the mice in this studio are in front of me, and my hands are here. And that's not me. What do you think about this? You know, we've talked about the possibility of extraterrestrial intelligent life a lot on this show. But Ganymede is not a place we've ever even talked about, never considered before. And yet there seems to be some pretty solid evidence that somebody is there. If NASA/SETI has picked up an intelligent signal that Ronald Reagan was briefed concerning that signal, an international confab was called together, and discussions about what to do took place, and then what they decided to do is let's send a message back. But let's send it in Morse code, because that'll be easy for them to decode, to break. And so they did it. The signal they had been receiving stops. And some time goes by, about a month goes by, maybe a little more than a month. And all of a sudden, here comes a message back from Ganymede in Morse code, in English. And it says, "We weren't talking to you." In other words, you guys mind your own business. Not too many people can tell the President of the United States to mind his own business, but they did. And I find it really, really fascinating. The whole story is fascinating, but not only is it fascinating, it is important. Ladies and gentlemen, life happens here, there, and everywhere. And now here's some more evidence. Maybe you were already familiar with this. I wasn't. maybe you already had heard about all of this. Maybe you've already downloaded that picture and you've already zoomed in and you've already adjusted the contrast and you've seen this stuff yourself. I had not. And I have been doing this a long time. And I've seen a lot of stuff. I've read a lot of stuff. But this just proves something, doesn't it? No matter how much you may think you know about anything, it is minuscule compared to what there is yet to know. If you took all the knowledge in all the universe and stacked it on top of each other, it would be a pinhead compared to what there is yet to know. And this just proves that point for me, and that is that, first of all, life doesn't have to be on a planet. It can be on a moon. And it doesn't have to be light years away on some habitable planet in a Goldilocks zone around some far distant star. It may be there. But it's also right here around us, apparently. I mean, that's what it looks like. It does to me. Maybe it doesn't look like that to you. And if it doesn't, I want to hear from you just as well as those of you who think that this evidence seems to indicate there is intelligent life on Ganymede. As far as I'm concerned, it does indicate that. I can't say that it proves it, but it certainly indicates it. I will say that the photograph does prove something. Again, this photograph is one that you can get yourself. Just go over to Wikipedia, or you can go, they reference where you get it at NASA. You can go get it at NASA. It's just easier to get it at Wikipedia because NASA's site is so massive, and you got to know exact search terms in order to get to stuff, and, you know. But just download this from Wikipedia. And when you do, go ahead and zoom in on that crater that's at the north end of the picture. And when you get zoomed in on that crater at the north end of the picture, change the contrast and brighten it up. And you'll see down in that hole, in that crater, exactly what we're talking about. And as far as I'm concerned, what that does, that is proof, not that there is right now intelligent life there, but that intelligent beings at least have been there. And then we have the story from Rupert Matthews, and in his book published in 2010, still available, it's, you can still buy it, it's called Alien Encounters by Rupert Matthews. And in that book it tells about this signal that was received or intercepted by SETI back in the 1980s. And his source was an astronomer, a NASA astronomer working with SETI. So, you know, it's not hard for me to think that there is intelligent life there now. And not only intelligent, but they apparently want to be left alone. We weren't talking to you, is what they responded. We weren't talking to you. Okay. 623-444-5889 is the number to call. And I would like to invite you to join the conversation. You know, this is big news, ladies and gentlemen. Big, big news. You know, I had heard about that signal. I had never read the account of it, but I had heard about that signal. And I heard about it a long time ago, you know, several years ago, and maybe in 2010. And maybe that's when I heard about it. And, you know, it was my impression, oh, yeah, okay. But when I got into doing the research for this show, I started realizing that that's pretty solid information. And, you know, it's that means this is big news. Do you even care that you've got neighbors? Do you care? Our government has been in contact with them, according to Mr. Matthews, and according to his source at NASA. Our government has been in contact with the people on Ganymede back in the 1980s. Ganymede, if it is inhabited, and I think it probably is not that far away. Oh, it's a stretch for us, but I mean, it's not that far away. Not really. Mars is in our backyard. Ganymede is in the next yard. It's really pretty close. Relatively speaking, it's pretty close. And if it's inhabited, is it possible that some of our UFO activity is coming from there? Is that possible? Is Ganymede and its inhabitants, is that what prompted Ronald Reagan to say what he said about aliens? It could be. It very well could be. Well, I'd like to know what you think about it. Are you thinking about it? You're certainly silent about it. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. We're talking about the possibility, I would say, from my point of view, the probability of intelligent life on Ganymede, one of the moons of Jupiter. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
What I found interesting about your narrative is that, let's say that the story about the transmission is true, which I'm not going to doubt. I'm not going to question that.
Okay.
But since I unfortunately missed part of Jerome's call, I don't know if he asked this or not, or if he noticed this, but as soon as they started transmitting, it stopped?
As soon as Earth transmitted to them, their signal stopped.
That tells me that their technology is beyond light speed.
Well, when I say as soon as we started transmitting, it could be as soon as that reached them, which may be like 30 minutes or 45 minutes away or something. But as soon as that message hit Ganymede, they stopped.
Yeah. I'm tending to think that that technology, that stuff in that crater, might be climate control for their underground facilities.
You know, it might be. I have no idea what that's all about there, but it could be that. Now, the two conversations that I had, you know, that I talked about at the beginning of the show, two different individuals telling me about going to Ganymede, both described the same thing. And what they described was that this was like a huge, gigantic complex. There could have been, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in this thing. And you have this transparent dome above it, and then above that another transparent dome. And they said that the ground, the color of the ground, was kind of orangish. Both of them said the same thing. Was somewhat orange. And the air outside, there was no breeze at all, you know, and the temperature, the climate outside, and the climate, the humidity, everything was exactly the same as when they were inside. So if you walked outside the building, you were out on the ground under that dome, those two domes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would have to have some sort of climate control for that, for sure. And if there are underground facilities, and I suspect there are, then you would have to have climate control for that. So you may be right. That may be what that is.
That was just my thought, because if they're going to have visitors from Earth, they have to have O2 for them to breathe, as well as the other trace minerals, trace elements.
Well, the atmosphere is mostly O2.
I thought it's O1 and O3. But
it's got O1 and O3 as well. It's mostly O2.
Like I said, I missed parts of it. So
Yeah, so it's it's allegedly a thin atmosphere, but if it's mostly O2, you wouldn't have to have the same thickness.
A lot, yeah. Just one thing.
Uh huh.
Don't light a match.
No. Yeah, well,
all
it's
right.
and maybe maybe what they're doing is sort of capturing some of that O2 and compressing it and putting it under higher pressure under the dome or something, you know.
Yeah, something to keep the dome structure so it doesn't collapse. And it's, well, let's put it this way, the White House has a higher pressure inside than the outside environment, so it's not beyond technology.
Okay. All right, man, thanks for the call.
Yep, okay, bye.
Bye. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. That's the telephone number, and that's the one to call. You know, I've just presented to you information, lots of information about the possibility and maybe probability of intelligent life on Ganymede. Ganymede is in our solar system. You know, I have had interesting conversations with people about Ganymede over the past couple of days now. And you would be surprised how many people think that's Ganymede is a star system. As far as I know, there is no Ganymede star system. You know, Woody Durenberger wrote a book back in, I don't know, 50s, 60s. And he says that he was taken to a planet by extraterrestrials. This planet is called, according to him, Lanulos. And he says it is in the Ganymede system. I went looking for that. And as far as I can find, there is no Ganymede star system. There is Ganymede. Ganymede is a moon of Jupiter. It is the seventh moon out. If you start at Jupiter and count all the moons coming out, it's the seventh one out. It's the third one that Galileo spotted, but it's the seventh moon out from Jupiter. It has a magnetosphere. It has an atmosphere of mostly oxygen. It has loads and loads of water, both in the form of ice and in the form of liquid. And it has land masses. One-third of that heavenly body is land, and it is comprised mostly of clay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome again from Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
Is it okay if I proceed?
You may as well. Nobody else is calling, Jerome. They've all gone to sleep, or they're dead, or something. I don't know.
You know what? That's what I figured, and I want to apologize for you having to carry on the show, but...
I appreciate that, but I don't, as you see, I can play music.
I didn't want to listen to music.
Okay.
You mentioned about these two people who've been to Ganymede.
Yeah.
Were they taken by ETs?
Yes.
And what I was getting at is this signal was 33 decades ago, and we have space technology now that's supposed to be 50 years ahead of what, you know, that we can go to these places. I'm sure the U.S. space, the secret space program has been to Ganymede.
Maybe. I don't know. Now, you know, it depends on who you talk to about how far ahead is our real technology. But I've been told that it's 200 years ahead.
Whatever it is, you know, I heard Laura Eisenhower say that we went to Mars, you know, quick time. And I like your analogy about if Mars is the backyard, then this is the next yard over.
Yeah.
And so it's very conceivable that it would be, you know, with our space technology that we would be there. And I'm sure that if we got a signal from them, President Reagan would want to check it out.
Yeah, regardless, you know, any president would want to check that out.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't have any knowledge of the secret space program going there, but I would not doubt that.
And my point is that I don't think that this is a threat to us, because if we could get there and their technology is ahead of us, that's because of that computing, you know, that mm-hmm. they broke our code and we couldn't break their code, we would have had trouble already.
Yeah, I think so. But I also think it's interesting that their response to us can easily be interpreted as mind your own business.
Oh, sure. You know what? And when you consider, like, our diplomats and that's not very diplomatic talk.
No, maybe the people on Ganymede have not learned to lie.
You know what? I think there's dark forces on the Earth, and as you can see with, like, recently this Catholic Church, the Pope and stuff, not to get into that area, but it does seem like there's good and bad.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like we are controlled by the bad.
Well, certainly a great many people on the planet are, and, you know, enough that it really shows up. And I would think that our neighbors around us, who obviously, as you pointed out, are you know, many, many years ahead of us in terms of technological development, I think they probably have monitored us and know exactly, I mean precisely, what the state of things really is on this planet. They may even actually have people from their planet living here. They may look just like us. And I'm not saying that that's the case, but it's a possibility. And reporting, you know, E.T. phones home and tells them, you know, hey, these people are nuts. This is bad news here. And, you know, I'm sure they know exactly what's going on here.
And you know what else? I like your reference about AC/DC.
Mm-hmm.
In so much that in our primitive times, if we worship ETs as God, and this behavior is what we've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the ancient gods, many of those gods, were, you know, AC/DC. They went both ways. And you also had that in both Greek and Roman culture. You know, a whole lot of the really powerful elite people of Greece and Rome were AC/DC.
Yeah, that's what I mentioned, like I said, when, and then we, you know, we as a primitive people seen this. And you would just say that these were gods, and this is how they behaved.
Yeah. I heard a guy say one time, whatever you worship, you will become like.
Now, that's interesting. I didn't think of that. Well, I don't worship AC/DC.
Well, he used an example. He said, you know, there are cults that worship monkeys, and they act like them. There are cults that worship lions, and they act like them. And there are, you know, cults that worship snakes, and they act like them. And he said, whatever you worship, you will become like it. And so if they were looking at these ETs and noticing that that's what they did, and they worship them as gods, well, if this guy's correct, well, yeah, they would become like that.
Yeah. Kevin, once again, thank you for doing the legwork on this. I'm pretty lazy, and I let you do all the legwork.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy it.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about the possibility, and I'm saying probability, of intelligent life existing on Ganymede, the seventh moon of Jupiter. I presented to you tonight the information and evidence. What do you think about it? 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889 is the number to call. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Well, this is John from Arizona. How are you doing tonight?
Doing great, John. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I was the mystery call from last night. When we were listening to a recording, I obviously didn't hear the part about the recording.
Okay.
Anyway, I was thinking, you know, as I was listening about the, you know, the coded message, and then they interpreted it within a short period of time. I thought just in an hour.
It took a month.
Oh, a month. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
right.
It took just over a month for them to respond.
Well, another thought would be that they had to think about whether they wanted to respond.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, that they, if they were super intelligent, yes, beings, that's a possibility, and they were decoding it and then got back to us. The other possibility is they were the elite who think they're better than the rest of us anyway, and they were measuring the weighing whether to respond or not, and obviously decided to tell us not to contact them again, which adds to the mystery of who's there and what are they doing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that they told us to mind our own business.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But either group would have had that same attitude.
And, you know...
Could have the same attitude.
Yeah. You know, it could be that they know us very, very well. And, you know, that they said,
and
you
they
know
what...
They
don't want us to know them.
Yeah. Don't visit. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, have you been over to Wikipedia and taken a look at that picture?
I did.
I hope you downloaded
it. I found a color picture, too, and blew it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at it, and I think the color picture actually confuses the issue more than the black and white one.
Well, the original pictures were black and white.
Oh, okay.
And so the color would be a false color.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do false color, that hazes details.
Sure.
It, you know,
well,
it makes it interesting.
The light spots, you know, if you look at the black and the white, if you've ever seen, you know, communities in the United States with all the lights reflecting back up,
mm-hmm.
you know, they look like, you know, small cities or large cities with their, you know, lights visible at nighttime to, you know, out into space like ours would be.
Yeah, but, you know, what you're looking at here is a daytime picture.
Oh, okay, well, yeah.
So it's you know, this is daytime. Now, one of the things, you know, whenever you take a look at the photograph, are you able to watch the show tonight?
No, I'm not able to watch tonight.
Whenever you take a look at this picture that I put up where I said it looks like a bunch of tombstones,
mm-hmm.
There's a big dome down there. You know, there's if you look at that one way, you would say, oh, no, that's a crater. Well, that's because of the shadow on the right side.
Right.
Because the sun is coming from the left side. But that's a big dome. And is it like a big, great big mound of stone, you know, a big boulder, a big hill? I can't tell. I will say that the left side where the sun is hitting it is highly reflective.
Yeah.
But anyway, just beyond that dome, there's all these little rectangular-looking white things, and they're all just kind of lined up, and, you know, it looks kind of like tombstones. But I'm not saying that's what it is. They obviously would be much, much, much bigger than that, because this is taken from, like, 260 kilometers away.
Well, ice also makes great dome-shaped figures, too, and
mm-hmm.
once you get it frozen in place, it's pretty sturdy.
Yeah.
You know, the light source could come up and be, you know, make the ice glow from underneath whatever, you know, was underneath.
Well, you downloaded the picture. You took a look inside that triangular dark spot in that crater. Did you see what we're talking about? The machinery?
Yeah, that's kind of to the left of the crater-looking thing.
No, it's right in the center of the crater.
Oh, okay. I was
right,
looking at the wrong thing.
Right dead center of that crater, on the north crater, the one at the top. And it has a triangular dark shape right in the center of that crater. And if you look right into the center of that dark spot...
I may not have as good a picture or capabilities as you do, but... I think I see the dark spot you're talking about, but my computer's fuzzing it out too much.
Well, it's basically a triangle. It's not a perfect triangle, but it's basically a triangular dark spot right in the center of that crater at the north. And if you take a look at it, even if you don't, if you just zoom in, and you don't change the contrast, you can see this stuff sitting in there.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, because if I don't even change the contrast, I can see that there is some shiny metallic-looking stuff in there. Now, when
you got to figure that the people that have all the access to the answers, NASA, you know, the ones in the secret space program, certainly haven't been sharing it with the rest of us, because we're still using the same kind of propulsion we did 50 years ago.
I can tell you what's happening at NASA right now. Some administrator down at NASA is saying, who the hell released that picture to Wikipedia?
Well, yeah, it's been floating around for how many years?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, they probably get real tired of people like you and the rest of us enjoying what you've found, looking up the mistakes that they've overlooked for years.
Or maybe they intended that at some point people are going to discover that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know.
Well, we talked about it in the past. You know, these people studied for a long time to become what they are and would like to think that things that they've found or things that they know about, they can share with others for either notoriety or conversation, you know, topics.
Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they
right.
want,
you know,
a lot of those
yeah,
folks
spend
want
a long time
to.
Learning and studying and performing, you know, whatever duties they do for them with these bodies that are out there and sharing space with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would like to share that with everybody.
Well, let me tell you this. On purpose tonight, I mentioned this earlier, and I just want to make it real clear. On purpose, I used the picture that Wikipedia has. I also took a look at it's exactly the same thing. It's over at NASA. But on purpose, what I'm putting on screen tonight and what I'm discussing, I copied it right off of Wikipedia. And it's like I say, it's exactly the same as what you'll get at NASA. But I did this because I wanted people to be able to do it themselves. Hey, the end of the show has hit us. Thanks for the call.